The world is changing at breathtaking speeds, with trends and fads popping up and passing away at breakneck pace. Against that backdrop of nearly constant upheaval, we welcome you to the Sunday Scotch Society. Over delectable, sumptuous scotches and with the occasional good cigar in hand, we have open, honest, and uninhibited conversation about whatever strikes our fancy. Whether it's the critical issue of the day or a deep dive down the rabbit hole, we take it all seriously while having a good time. Join us for a stiff drink and a great conversation. Welcome, folks, to the Sunday Scotch Society. I am the inimitable, the inveterate, the intransigent, the
what
intractable.
What is Scotch? Wasn't that an insult at one point? Like didn't people say Scotch? Like, because that's how the origin of Scotch tape. Whereas, like, this is garbage tape. It's Scotch tape.
Yes, but the problem with what you are doing.
Sorry, I apologize. Go ahead.
No. The problem is that you are associating an insult with a nationality.
Is Scotch named after Scottish people?
Yeah, that's all it is.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's probably what the insult is, too.
That's precisely my point. The point of the insult was you're one of them. Or this thing is associated with them, quote unquote, right? So, in any event, that is the name of the show, the Sunday Scotch Society. The conceit is, over the course of our conversation, we'll have a nice little tot of some Scotch-like drink.
I was gonna say, I thought the conceit was that you guys don't ever drink Scotch.
Oh no, we.
Because that'd be hilarious. Like, we never drink Scotch.
We usually drink Scotch, okay. But occasionally we go off, I call it off the beaten path. Today, in fact, people will know your voice, but let me do it properly.
Go ahead.
Ladies and gentlemen, our guest today, of course, you know Matthew, my co-host Matthew. Hi. Okay, you need to figure out how to say hello, babe, because your highs, I whatever. But our guest is I call him one of the most creative and influential people in a certain sort of demographic.
In a very specific. Very specific.
Will you let me talk about how I call you?
Go ahead.
Please, thank you. I think he is much more useful and important than I think he gives himself credit for. And I'm really glad to have the opportunity to talk to him on the show today. Do we call you Shinwin or do we call you Stephen Hanna? Or in any event, ladies and gentlemen, my guest is Stephen Hanna.
Right.
Our guest is Shinwin.
Okay. I made it sound like Stephen is his only hair, Quincy. Matthew only knows Shinwin.
Right.
I mean, that'd be weird. I mean,
which is incorrect.
Which is incorrect, precisely. Right. So, what is correct? Correct me, please.
Boy, when you said what is correct, I'm reminded of, was it, is it GMC Booth? That said, like, everything is fiction, but not everything is a lie. So, okay. When you say what is true, it's like, what is true? That is the question. There is no
what.
So when you say what is correct, what is right?
Help! I'm drowning. It's just a little deep already. You know?
I apologize. So there is no. It depends on where you know me from,
mm-hmm.
Right? And so, for I guess narcissistic purposes, at a young age, I decided that in different areas, I would go by different names so that I could know where mm-hmm. a person knew me from. Because inevitably, there are people
there
who know
be
me
people
as who... one thing, mm-hmm. and they don't know that I'm this other person. And then I could, you know, perhaps hear them talk about me in a different light. So, in written form, if I'm doing, like, just writing, and not, you don't hear my voice, you don't see my face, it's S.A. Hanna, which is my initials, but also it sounds like S.A., so like a like a long set of words or whatever, right? So there's that. If it is on radio, it's Steven Hanna, and that's mostly because Wally was like, people don't know how to spell Shinwin, and they'll never be able to email you. So Steven Hanna.
Mm-hmm.
And then Shinwin is mostly online and like video stuff.
Who is the Alan Molek fan club?
You mean like who are the members of the fan club? Because that is, I mean like, what is the question you're asking? Are you asking who is Alan Molek, or who are the fans of Alan Molek? Or are you asking specifically who are the members of this organization?
I am asking, let's start with who is Alan Molek.
It's not a real person.
Exactly.
Right.
So who is Alan Molek?
I mean, it's more of a concept than anything else. So this is the official answer that we've contrived. So you
there's
may or may
real
not
answer?
Yeah, you may, there's a whole video on it. You okay. may or may not be familiar, but Molek is a Canaanite
precisely
of fire.
Who is associated with
a child sacrifice.
Child sacrifice, precisely,
right.
Yes.
But I mean, when you look at it, right, there is no better, there's no more fitting, I wouldn't say metaphor, but stand-in for Bahamian culture at times, particularly political culture. How often do we see persons that, like, they're in their 50s and people are like, oh, that's a young man, he just needs to wait his turn, right? I think back to Tommy Turnquest, who was Tommy T in 2002. He was a grown man. But people are like, oh, that's Orville's son, and, you know, it ain't his time yet. He young. He was a grown man.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm saying that with the knowledge that I was 15 at the time, and I was saying, but he's a grown man. He's an adult human being. I think he's like in his 40s or something.
Mm-hmm.
But people, like, they infantize him to that point or whatever, and like, oh, you gotta wait your turn, you gotta wait your turn. And that's a specific instance. But if you look over, there's a whole entire generation of people who never were able to practice power or be a part of power because the people of the first generation refused to let it go. And their children will never be anything in politics or in power to some extent. Like, even though some of them, like, have fought their way through it, the majority of them is like, okay, just skip this generation. And when these old people die, this new set of 40-year-olds will have to take over. But the people who were adults from, like, maybe the 80s, those guys, like, nothing ever happened to them. And you see where people will sacrifice the youth, or in less pagan terms, the Bahamas eats its young.
That's less pagan?
Yeah, that's less pagan.
Cause,
okay. Because like,
you didn't use the word sacrifice.
Yeah, we didn't use any like divine names or anything. But mm-hmm. It's like persons who are like, I do not care about the fate of my children or the future. I need to win. Right? And so I need to retain power. I need to get, I should be this person who has a job, even though I retired at 65. I'm going to come back as a consultant as opposed to training somebody. I don't care if the oil that I sell is leaking into the harbor. It makes me millions of dollars. Because, and 100 years from now, I'll be dead. So who cares if the bomb is on fire then? I don't care if the policies that I make do this horrible thing and the repercussions of it come out 50 years from now. 50 years from now, I'll be 80 in air condition in an old folks home in South Florida. This will not be my problem. That is Molek. And so, in a way, when you say, who is the Alan Molek fan club? It is all of the persons who are in power in the Bahamas. It is all the persons who wield power and refuse to let it go. It's all the people who make decisions that impact persons beneath or younger than them. And they like, well, the consequences don't matter to me.
you just to finish off, you have a logo.
Yes. Wow. This was my next question. And not only the logo, the tagline too. Why?
Right.
Tell us a little about the owl.
I mean, that's because Rolex symbol is the owl. But it's like,
okay.
Right. So, I mean, it was that. But also, the why is because at first, the first time that I put like a tag on it, there are probably like a couple of videos that say who. Because it made sense. Because, you know, the owl says who. But then I was like, wait. But it would make more sense if the owl said why. Like, to question, like, what. Okay, so after you watch the video, like, why would a person do that? Why is this happening? Mm-hmm. Sort of thing. So, and in all honesty, if you could get to the why of a lot of things, it makes life it makes it more bearable, because either you could figure out a way around it, or you could figure out, okay, this person isn't doing this thing just because they hate me. It's this they're dealing with. And then you know how to operate yourself. But, and a lot of people don't like the whole idea, like when you tell them, say, oh, well, the reason that we do this is because of this. And like, oh, you're getting into things too deep. Things just exist because they exist. No, things exist for a reason. If you could address the reason, then either you could fix a problem, or you'd realize we shouldn't move this thing because of, like, it's Chesterton who says, don't tear down fences.
Chesterton's fence, yes.
Right. Don't tear down fences.
You come to a fence, before you tear it down, it might be worth your while asking, why is this fence here?
Right. Because it might be to keep something out or to keep something in.
Yes.
So you don't just tear it down because you don't know. But you need to know the why before you can get to that point of that knowledge.
One of the things that comes to mind...
And that's why I'm a comedian.
I'll try to edit in a ba-dum-bum rim shot situation, yeah. But no, one of the things that comes to mind when I hear you is the very first time that I met you. You don't remember this, but we were on Dwight's show. For whatever reason, I was co-hosting the show, and you were not yet co-hosting. You were a guest. You had just graduated from COB / UB, whatever.
And COB at the time, yeah.
And you asked, you complained that the people at the institution had not taught you how to have a revolution. I remember that complaint.
That does sound like a like a young person's squabble. Go ahead.
No, but and it I my response to the statement at the time was that showed a lack of understanding of how revolutions work, because nobody's going to teach you to have a revolution.
Yeah.
But it also demonstrated an appetite for a revolution in a way that was a lot more tangible and articulate than I think many people who are less than 40, you know, maybe between 20 and 40 right now as they're listening to the show. There's a desire for a revolution that is extant and present in the moment, even if there is a sense of helplessness at the same time, that says, I might want to have a revolution. I don't know how to go about it. I don't know where to even begin. I don't know the first move to make.
But, you know, the reason that it might seem like that was more articulate is because, or more realized, it's because most people have good parents. If you have decent parents, right, then you don't see the world being the crumbling mess that it is as quickly.
Mm-hmm.
So it takes a while after leaving your parents' house, or like going out in the world and realizing, oh no, adults can be horrible.
Yeah.
The world is a shaky place. You shouldn't trust people. And you should question things or whatever. Like, it takes a while to build it up, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah. No, I agree with you 100%. And I also, I wanted to address it since we are in that something similar to that kind of a forum again. That I think that that I think your view would probably be a little different now. With the benefit of
teaching. Well, the thing is,
not that they didn't teach you.
But you saying, I mean, I don't remember the occasion, but I would still say they didn't teach me, and that would be the point, because it's like their point as an instrument of the state would be specifically to not teach you how to do revolution or how a revolution works in its true form or whatever, because
in any form, in my view,
they're trying to maintain a status quo. So it's like it would be more questioning the absence of this, because like I don't know if you guys remember the 90s? How easy it was to buy explosive powder?
What kind of, yes.
Yeah.
It was so easy. Like, you could buy all the poisons, all the explosives. People used to make pipe bombs for fun in the Bahamas. They used to put different chemicals inside a bottle and watch it blow up. Right? Mm-hmm. That was a normal childhood activity.
Yes.
Right? You cannot buy firecrackers in the Bahamas. Like, how are you, like, literally, if I had a dollar, I could just go to the corner store when I was a kid and just buy a 10 shot. Or I could buy a little Pappas. And, like, every time I see the little exploding things, I'm like, wow, somebody's selling, I buy some. Right? But it's like, it's the world has become such a place where it's like, it is not just, you are not being taught that about these things, or you're not being taught, hey, this is how this works. You need saltpeter and this and that. We've gone from that to this is dangerous to it doesn't exist.
I don't know that we're saying it doesn't exist.
No, you don't say it doesn't exist. It doesn't exist. Like, you're a child who is 8 years old right now doesn't know what 10 shot is.
However, they could go to a certain shop on Wolf Road or Parkade Road or whatever the case may be, and they might be able to find it.
If you're in walking distance of Wolf Road, perhaps you might be able to find some. Mm. But if you're in Golden Gates,
they'll eat your lunch.
Right, that's a different...
If you want those.
But I'm saying, that's a different culture. The culture of the country has changed, and the way people have addressed nuisances have changed, and all these different stuff. And so having this vacuum, to me, is more dangerous. Because even though people in the 90s were making these little chemical bombs or whatever, right? Mm-hmm. We never had somebody blow up a building in the 90s. Now, they might have said, oh, it's going to get to that point, so let's stop doing this stuff. Somebody's going to lose a finger or an eye, and it's dangerous. And that was a part of it. But now we have a situation where it's like, in this void of controlled chaos, of this controlled explosion where children could do weird stuff, and it's like, oh, that's just kids being kids, we show them how to do it the correct way, there's nothing. And so anything that they learn about that, or when these children do discover it, as invariably TikTok will one day teach them how to make their homemade firecrackers from, I don't know, Ritz crackers and something else and bleach or some weird foolishness, right? That's when it's going to be dangerous, because they're going to have to discover the good and bad by living it.
Okay, so to extend this, right?
Before you extend, I feel like I need a drink because we've gotten incredibly deep.
Yes,
I apologize.
No worries, that's fine. That's why you're here. This is a real conversation, right? But I want to share with you guys my favorite. I use the word favorite. Guardedly and advisedly, right?
Matthew shook his head.
Yeah, because he knows that Teeling is not my favorite Irish whiskey. My favorite Irish whiskey is the Redbreast 12-year-old.
Wow. In this climate?
Yeah, in this climate. Mm-hmm. But Teeling is...
You know, words, the fact that words have so many meanings, it's like, continue.
Yes.
They have a registry for people, sir. Go ahead.
Yes, they do. Yes. Teeling is my second favorite Irish whiskey. And this particular offering is the first offering from Teeling's very first Dublin brewery. They're not native to Dublin, so they just moved to Dublin, and this was the first whiskey that they made out of the Dublin brewery.
Are the barrels of Dublin origin or something?
No, the brewery is located in Dublin.
No, I'm saying, does the air just do something different to it, or it's just like a, well, it's a spiritual thing?
They moved because of, I think the
taxes. It's probably taxes.
It's probably taxes.
Because Ireland has like that little tax loophole. They're like the.
I'm sure that if there are those dipsomaniacs and tipplers and inebriates who wish to go that deep into why Teeling is in Dublin now, I'm sure they can find out.
It's probably taxes.
However, I'm going to open this bottle now.
Go ahead.
And we will find out what we find out.
Woo! Kind of fruity.
Yeah.
Mm. That was quite a nose from a foot away.
My goodness. All right.
Is it supposed to look like apple juice? I'm not suggesting that it is not actually alcohol, that they've been lying to you for the past several episodes. It has the consistency and the color of apple juice.
That's actually, wow, my
and
God.
Doesn't it smell like apples?
This has really opened up over the last week.
It's, you know, that doesn't smell like apple cider to you?
Yeah, it does. Not apple cider exactly, but it does have apples and
it has apple notes from a distance, but like up close, that smells like it smells like bubbles.
Mm-hmm. This, the color and consistency that you were talking about is one of the things that makes Irish whiskey distinct from Scotch whiskey. Scotch and whiskey are the same drink, with the exception that Scotch is made in Scotland and whiskey is made in Ireland. It's like bourbon is the same drink but made in the United States.
And they're all made from barley or?
Barley.
Wheat?
So there's different stocks.
Yeah.
So you got your wheat, your barley, your rye, your basics.
And the
corn.
The good bourbon is like really corn heavy, like the corn mash. But it's the same process that is applied to the ingredients that, you know, that, so.
It's all grass.
That's one way to look at it.
No, I mean, they all are grass.
That's technically true.
They're all grass.
As I said, it's one way to look at it.
I mean, you could also say they're all corn, technically. Somewhere in the world, they're corn.
Oh, my God.
Well, corn.
Because corn is a term.
Do you mean maize or you mean corn?
I mean corn. I mean maize. This,
okay.
Right. Mm-hmm. But when he said corn mash, he meant maize. But go ahead. You're talking about the taste. Is it supposed to have legs like that?
Well, see, that's the thing, right? The last time we had a conversation about legs on whiskey, it was with the Jameson, which... My view is legs is not really a thing for whiskey. However, this very much is demonstrating a serious set of legs.
Right, like it's a slow drain. That like that's. Mm-hmm. I mean, sorry, I just corrected it because it's such a strong.
No, apparently you could tell the distillery, or that's part of the signature, is from the legs, but. I'm given to understand, Quincy, correct me if I'm wrong, that is due to the oil content.
Mm. Yeah, but it's also more myth than real. Because, a lot of the things about this, I mean, let's be fair, at the end of the day, it's alcohol. And you drink it because you enjoy it. And enjoying it is an acquired taste. And if you are built that way and you acquire the taste, then that's when you can get into the nuances, right? But before you get to the nuance conversation, you got to get in the room. And I know some people who refuse to walk in the door and get in the room, so to speak. But those people are not present on the Sunday Scotch Society. How could they? How could they be?
Possibly, no. Mm-hmm. It's,
so what you were gonna say about the oil, though?
On the I'm just saying that tends to affect
the
flavor. That will affect how much sticks around, right? Mm-hmm. So you make your swallow and then like.
I have a question, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because I know, I mean, people have.
Mm. Lord have mercy, this smells.
This thing where they're like, okay, whiskey is this, and you could tell, certain people could taste the difference between, I guess, a cheap bourbon and an expensive bourbon or whatever it might be, mm-hmm. right? Or mm-hmm. a well aged one and these different things. I know that for wine, sometimes you want it to breathe, you want to aerate it, so like, and the tannins and the sulfides and all these different things mm-hmm. that affect mm-hmm. how the notes hit you or whatever. Mm-hmm. Is there something similar with whiskey or is because of the high alcohol content that it doesn't have the same effect? Because I know wine doesn't have 46% by volume that whiskey would have. Like it's not. Well, wine is like 20
in the components,
those,
right?
Eight. Yeah.
They're going to be.
No, bears eight.
They're bear gonna can be, range from like. Two yeah. all the way up to 9, 10.
Yeah.
Well, with the craft bears, it's getting.
Yeah, those get high.
They crazy. get up to like 13 or 14. Yeah.
No, man. They in excess of that in some of these crazy.
But that's
like,
on purpose.
They brew them just to see. Yeah, yeah. I mean, no, totally on purpose. Yeah. What I was going to say is that there are elements in the whiskey that are dissolved by alcohol, and there are some that are dissolved by water. Right, mm-hmm. and so in that way, they'll hit you different depending on if you just drinking it straight,
neat,
or if you do a little water, or if you have it with rocks, or if you're gonna hit it in a mixed drink, it's all gonna. So the subtlety is there. Right. Long story short,
and there's.
But the answer
to your question about breathing is yes, it does.
This opened mm-hmm. when was that? A week, two?
A week ago.
It is breathed and opened up on my palate, mm-hmm. and so you say it's like, much better for it in my estimation.
It's mellowed out, or was it too like acrid? What was the like, or did it, or is it more complex now than it was a week ago, or is it? Or is it more, I guess...
While Matthew's thinking about it, I'm going to let him think about that. Mm-hmm. After college, my first job out of college was I was a singing waiter in a fine dining Italian restaurant. This was because I was an opera singer, and, you know, you had to find a job during the day, right? And... The restaurant's manager was a former drill sergeant by the name of Benny. And Benny made every server in the restaurant have a specialty. And he decided that my specialty would be the cordials. So I had to learn the scotches, the whiskies, the rums, all the cordials.
All the stuff that comes in small glasses.
All that stuff that comes in small glasses. And we could charge $20 for the small glass as opposed to whatever, right? And so after being assigned to learn these things, I had to start tasting them, of course, in order to be familiar with them,
so that
I
could
tell people what it was like, to be able to sell them, or whatever the case may be. Obviously, I developed a taste for them, hence the Sunday Scotch Society. But one of the things that was most fascinating to me was, I don't know if you're familiar with something called a tulip glass, but what a tulip glass is,
it's like this, but smaller, right?
No, and it's not just the size. It is a glass that the bottom of the bowl of the glass is shaped like a wine glass.
Right.
But the top flares out. And the reason that the top flares out, because the tulip glass is created for cordials like whiskey or scotch. And what you're doing is that it is allowing the notes from the nose to open up so that you get those before you drink, because that enhances the flavor. Yeah. Because
your olfactory glands play a part of the taste.
And they are reinforcing whatever, the nose is reinforcing whatever you feel on the tongue, whatever you're tasting. So to say that that it has to breathe is, I mean, nothing, it's part of the mystique. But there is reality, there is actual difference once it has sat open for a while and once it's been exposed to the air. To me, this is, well, I mean, Matthew has been ruminating this whole time, so I'd like to hear what he has to say on it. But there's definitely a difference between drinking this now, a week after opening it, and drinking it right after opening.
Yeah, I would say for me, it has mellowed a bit, but I don't know if that is due to the fruits coming forward or if there's actual mellowing of the more bitter notes that are there. So
we'll see.
Yeah.
You know, by the time we get to the bottom of the bottle, we'll have a proper assessment to offer to Stephen.
It's good.
Yeah. we can start there.
Very articulate.
The Scotch is.
Me.
The whiskey or you?
Me.
Oh, okay.
It's good.
Okay. Good.
You know, articulate would be an interesting way to describe
Scotch.
Yeah. Especially, I feel like that's a good way to fake your way through it.
Yeah.
If you didn't know any better, so like, how is it?
Oh, it's very articulate.
Oh, it speaks to me.
Yeah.
Quite articulate.
I can. There's a particular person in my life. I can hear them saying that right now. I'm not going to call any names, but you know who you are, Stephen. The reality, though, is that you are. I won't call you. It is easy in our community to call someone a voice. Right, to assign a constituency to someone who has a platform. You have a very well defined platform in your video, your video life in social media. Even more so, I think, than the character that you have unveiled in your radio appearances. I think that's probably not to suggest that there's anything false or fake about it. I'm just saying, I think people understand more of who you are.
Everything is fiction,
according to you, or according to whatever. But the video is it's your creation, right? It's your medium, it's your words, it's your choice of shot, it's your choice of edits, whatever the case may be.
Right.
So I think that is, to me, a more honest and accurate representation of whatever point of view you're bringing to the table. But
yeah.
why would you take such care to present these views that you share in cyberspace, in social media? I mean, you're not standing up in the middle of Rawson Square yelling into the breeze.
Why would I do that?
But one could say that essentially
that is the least productive way to do anything.
Right.
I mean, unless you try to run a scam where you sue the government for wrongful arrest.
We're not going to call any names or point any fingers there either.
Yeah.
Or as Matthew is...
But you notice they stopped harassing him.
As Matthew is successfully doing. Sips. Not sips tea, but sips whiskey.
That's a really good game. If you could get the government to constantly, like police, to get annoyed at you, arrest you, detain you for a couple hours, and then release you because they don't have anything to actually hold you on, the government will pay you out rather than take it to court. out of sham. And so it's like, if you made $100,000 off of each one, that's a really good con.
Speaking of which,
I noticed you didn't answer my question, but okay.
Well, sorry, no. What was the question? The question was,
I wanna backtrack just a little bit, okay, right? Taking just a little bit further the view of the world as a youngster and
back then,
coming to see how things are, in your view.
Because this man got gray in his beard. I don't know if you could call him a youngster.
So, no. I mean, how he saw the world.
When I was younger.
But we were talking about COP, yeah, and its role as an institution to keep status quo. Do you think that that is not unique, but that is a feature of that particular institution, or are you ascribing that to all, let's say, universities?
You would not be able to exist at a certain size if you did not play a part in what the status quo thinks of as, oh, this is a part of my plan. They're going to help me to preserve this. So like I don't think it's just universities. I think it's any organization of a certain size. I actually have a specific number inside my head where it's like, if you go past 150, you need to question your organization. Because that's the size of like a hunter-gatherer tribe. Once you get past 150, if you have 200 friends, do you really have 200 friends?
Right. Well, I mean, yeah.
You know, 200 people.
This is the Dunbar's number question conversation.
Right. And I mean, but that's my specific number. That doesn't have to be.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then, I mean, the number, it's the concept that's important, not the specific number.
Right.
And so I take that on, right? And
because the think about it, a government has to give permission for every area of your life. Whether people say marriage is religious or it's a holy thing instituted by God, but the government has to give you a license. The church does not arrest you for marrying two people. The government does. You have to get a license from the government to marry. You have to get a license from the government to drive. You have to get a license from the government to do everything. Things that we think of as free, technically you pay the government for, not only in the taxes like VAT, but also to go to the hospital, there is a fee. Now, behemoths choose to opt out of the fee, but there's a fee. Government school is not free. There's a $40 registration fee. People like my mother decided that was not for her to pay. Mm-hmm. All these Haitians go in there for free. Why has she got to pay? So she did not pay it. But there is a fee, right? The government, the fact that they don't always go after people for the government's money, or what they believe is theirs, that you need to pay me for the right to do this thing, doesn't mean that they don't have that right to revoke it or punish you for not doing that thing. And I say all that to say, anything that exists on a certain level, and it's like, this is too big to miss,
right,
has to be playing a part of the government's plan. And in the widest sense, the status quo's plan, their existence is proof that they're part of the plan.
Okay,
so they're playing it even if they're not nefarious. It doesn't have to be, because status quo doesn't have to be nefarious, because it just means like we want to be at a point of, we like where we are, we want to remain here, or we're afraid of going back. So let's at least stick here for now.
Right. Well, this is the subtlety that I want to tease out of this systems conversation, right? Before we move forward, because
this is the rabbit hole.
Well, there's two points here I want to make quickly. One is, I want to know, are you looking at that in any of those institutions as part of this system, right? As that is what it is, point blank, end of story. Or is it true that universities also drive change? While they do keep the momentum,
right,
which is the equivalent, unfortunately, to a certain inertia in the system, that they also are part of the evolution of that same thing. See, I don't think that you think that it isn't. I just want to make clear
that this
is a thing in the listener's mind.
Right.
That it's not black or white here.
And I want to take off from Matthew and go further.
So don't answer his question.
Not yet.
Okay.
Because
this is going to be hard to retain that. Okay.
Go ahead. Answer his question.
No.
I'll complicate it after your answer. You don't even remember.
It's a yes or no question, right? I feel like, okay, so the question was...
Do you think that although they play a part in maintaining status quo, they also play a part in changing status quo?
Yes.
Okay. Do you think that ratio of keeping things to change or the same is something that is dynamic, or it's only always a little bit of change?
It is for them to survive in with the permission of... the state, the status quo, the oligarchy, whoever it is, right? Whoever they have the answer to. It has to be more same and what we are comfortable with than change.
Okay.
But if even for just aesthetic purposes, there is this idea of change. But also, for me to say that'd be ridiculous because, like, clearly, me being able to ask, why weren't we taught revolution after leaving COB is a product of me going to COB and having certain teachers. Yes, we're not going to say this is how you do this and this is how things should be or whatever, but we're going to dissect this book over here.
Right.
And we're going to read this book, and I want you to think about what this means.
Mm-hmm.
And why does Winston say this about the chocolate? And why... sometimes, you know, we got a boost in rations of chocolate, but even, he remembered it being 70.
Even
last
if
week.
It's only just
looking at
developing
that.
The skills of inquiry for you,
right?
And without any,
yeah,
any so, insertion of what where they think you should
right.
go and inquire.
They're not gonna say. I mean, so they don't necessarily say, "Oh, this is the things that you guys should go and demand."
Yeah,
that's not the curriculum isn't. And now, how to overturn the government, or now how to form a political party to upend the present ones, right? That's not in the curriculum. But if they, and here's the thing, the entirety of to answer the question that I feel like you asked me earlier was, why am I doing this video stuff? Right? It's because. The whole point of it is like, okay, I have a thought. I think I figured out something. I want to tell you guys it. Because if I tell you it, and you guys are like, you guys see it as well, then now all of us see it, and now we're all going to operate differently. Or at least we're operating, even if we operate the exact same thing, we're operating with the knowledge of, I'm doing this because of this, which is different from, I'm just moving around mindlessly. And the psychic relief that just knowing why something is happening makes you feel a little bit more in control of your life.
I want to hear Quincy's complication, but I do want to get to my second point before I sit back and shut up.
So if you educate the entire behavior populace and not just you graduated from high school or you have a bachelor's degree or master's degree, whatever level of degree, right? Not that, but actually... equip people with the tools to, I don't know the answer to 347 times 874, but I know how to arrive at it. I know there's a process, and I know, or at the very least, I know where to go to get to the process to deal with this issue. If you educate the entire populace to that point, that changes the whole entire country. And there are people who think, oh, I do know how to deal with this. I go to this one person. I go to my MP, and they will do the multiplication for me. Or I need money, so I'm going to look for a job at this place. And then you realize that the more work you do, the less money you make. The less work you do, the more likely you are to make six figures. All right? So the guy at the top comes in once a week and says, I think we need to be more in tune with the customers, and leaves. He has shares in the company. He has an air-conditioned office. Mm-hmm. He has a 90-inch screen TV.
Mm-hmm.
he's gone to the south of France. The guy, the COO underneath him, then talks to the directors. The directors talk to the managers. The managers talk to the line staff. Mm-hmm. And by the time you get to the techs on the ground who are doing the actual work, you're talking with people who are, they might make somewhere between 20 and 25,000 a year, but then they have to get married to somebody to afford a mortgage. But the guy at the top is getting paid what half of the company is getting paid annually. And he just did, all he did is said an obvious sentence. Everybody could have said that sentence. But the education is the point. And so that's the point of the videos. I apologize. Go ahead.
Well, nothing to apologize for to begin with. Secondly, the university experience is not intended to, in my view, teach you anything. It is intended to expose you to opportunities for learning. That's why teachers don't chase behind you to do homework. Right? And
at the very least, that is a benefit, definitely, of going to college or university. The exposure, even to other students.
Yeah, for sure. But and I think that on the question of revolution, and bringing it forward from there to affecting the community and the society that you live in, tangibly, the university is a flower bed, right, where revolution is bred, not from the perspective of a specific curriculum on how to overthrow the government, but through poli-sci teacher, the late Professor Felix Bethel, challenging you on why do you believe what you believe, through somebody in the English class saying, well, this person may have made this statement, but how do they justify it? It gets your brain lubricated to an extent, but the responsibility for the revolution that you seek is on you as an individual.
All right.
And
well,
no, not well. It is, and this is my challenge with the group of people. I'll call them the class of people who want a revolution.
Go ahead.
Right?
I agree with you.
Yeah.
To an extent, but go ahead.
Yeah. They want a revolution, but not badly enough to actually revolt.
Right.
And in that instance, the question has to be asked. If you don't want it badly enough to actually revolt, how badly do you want the revolution?
But see, that's the thing. For some persons, the lack of action is not, that is the wisest course of action for them to take, not because of they fear consequences, because they do not know how to go about it, right? So we have the problem of mass media, that whether that be new media or old media, mass media is a problem in that it is effective at teaching us things, but those things often aren't truth. With a capital T,
mm-hmm.
right? They're not like general truths that you can apply anywhere. Sometimes revolution is burning down a building, but oftentimes revolution is boring philosophy and person sitting down and people reading pamphlets and realizing, oh, I shouldn't work for this company, or I don't need to work for this company because the only thing this company is giving me is a wall to work behind. All of us who are complaining have all of the power. Like, we do all of the work. We are the company. If all of us got up and left and did the exact same thing outside the company, we would make twice as much money. And that'd be the end of the story. We'd make twice as much money. And there'd be like almost zero consequences outside of the person saying, oh no, they can't open up that over there. And then you just fight on that part. But mass media teaches us the only type of abuse is sexual or getting punched in the face. That's the only type of abuse. Now, psychologists will teach you there's at least six types of abuse that a person could have, right?
Mm-hmm.
They also teach you, so in terms of revolution, the only type is burning down a building. But there's more to it than that. And so when a person sits down and says, people say revolution is the answer. I feel in my heart that something in the Bahamas needs to change. I do not understand how burning down a government building would achieve that. They're right. Because the problem isn't that building. Mm-hmm. That would actually probably help the government because mole in the building. What would actually, right? So it's like, you understand what I'm saying? Like, burning down the building is not the solution. The problem is, as Matthew has alluded to, the systems, right? We have I wouldn't say a rig system, but like, this is not scotch tape, a duct tape system to begin with. Mm-hmm. Around the 1950s, a group of guys from Long Island realized, hey, there's a flaw in the system that we can exploit because the system isn't actually properly formed. Parties are a hack to our parliamentary system. The way a parliamentary system works is not whatever party wins is they select the leader. It works as individual MPs get voted in and they select who they think amongst them. We have to come to a consensus. That's how it should work. But
that's how it works elsewhere.
Sometimes, but right? But here's the thing. But if you have
a
party.
You can't say should, though. That's my challenge.
I could say should. But I mean, you could argue about it. For the argument, for the sake of argument. Mm-hmm. Right? So these individuals, we have to all say, okay, you know what? Even though me and Quincy don't agree on everything, I think that Quincy is the most rational person. He'll lead the majority of us in the right direction. He's the guy he'll be fair. And so the majority of us vote, Quincy's now the prime minister. That's how a prime minister should be picked in this parliamentary system. That's not what's happening. Parties say we are going to run everybody. We play the spread, betting on everything. Something could hit, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. So if all our people get in, we already know who the prime minister is. If half our people get in, we already know who the prime minister is. That's a hack in the system because nobody had to sit down and come to an agreement, even though we don't necessarily agree on everything, to say this guy is
however,
that. And that's also why you can't remove a prime minister.
Let me challenge you.
Because they already have a loyalty to somebody.
But
all parties.
But they make the same calculus that you're talking about.
Right. Right?
They are making that decision prior to the election.
Yeah.
As opposed to after the election.
But I'm saying, but making it after the election, right, is at least slightly more fair because now it's like
in your paradigm, parties are hacking the system,
right?
And therefore, your statement is fair. So I won't challenge you on it. I will only say that I just want to be very clear
that you don't believe that parties are hacking.
No, that Quincy Parker is not the prime minister, nor is nor is it likely that Quincy Parker will ever be the prime minister, nor is it likely that any party would select Quincy Parker as the prime minister.
You never know. Don't play.
I just want to make sure that
under the right circumstances
about that
possible.
Because you know there's some issues. And I just want to make sure that those caveats
that you're not the prime minister
are issued. Yes.
Okay. All right. Let me jump in here, right?
Go ahead.
You describe.
I want to come back to creativity after this.
Yeah. Yeah. But since we're talking about systems, you describe the parties as a hack, right?
Right. Inside this particular
system. Yeah. So I mean, a hack is always against a system as it actually operates, mm-hmm. not as it was intended to, etc.
That's
right?
How the PLP formed before the UBP. The UBP was a response to the PLP,
right?
And that's how they were able to get a foothold in to make a level of change. And at that time, that's what was needed to overcome the existing oligarchy system.
Right, but the thing that I want to point out, right, is
the rest of his sentences. But now is a different time.
But now what do we need?
Well, I mean, but even at the time, the question is, okay, why does that hack work? Was it the base of that? And it may not be one thing, right? But
I mean, it didn't work right away.
There's
a foothold in.
this is something, it continues to work, that I've thought about this for quite some time, right? And the reason that it continues to work is something that people probably won't intuitively jump up and say, well, that's it, right? The reason is first past post voting. And until you could sit down and not have an emotional reaction to how things work, or just look at it at the surface, and you take the time to say, okay, why is that like that? And then go another layer, well, why is that like that? And you keep going until you come to a few root causes, you're not gonna actually be able to operate within the system. So your only option would be to burn it down, which has its own problems.
Yeah, but then you have to start over. And then if you're burning it down because you couldn't understand the original one, we back to the fence argument.
The complication that I feel is appropriate here is parties are a reflection of, as much as they're a hack, they're a reflection of choice. And
go ahead. I'm not going to quote Sean Bouchard and be like, yeah, they're a reflection of choice. You could not have said it with more truth, sir. Go ahead.
I did my best to say it with as much truth as I could, even though you wish to poke holes in me by slashing me with your philosophical derring-do. I hear you and whatnot. But no, I think that what they did, if you burn it down and say, okay, everything that has gone before is useless, and now it's time to start again. The challenge with that is, what do you do in the meantime?
Right. No, you have to have a plan or something.
I remember.
No, you have to have a plan. If you don't have a plan. The person, I understand, the reason why everything is broken inside the Bahamas is because somebody makes money off of broken things. If you burnt everything down, the same people who already own everything will then make money selling you shovels for you to clean up the ashes. You have to have a plan.
And
well said, sir.
Who is it that... Okay, so I remember at a press conference in the... late 1990s, I was still a reporter at the time. Ingram was the prime minister, and I went to a press conference that he held. And I asked about diversification, because at the time, diversifying the economy was a huge conversation. Everybody was talking about economic diversification, right, and moving the country away from a reliance on tourism.
Right.
Ingram's point of view was that the talk about diversification was a political distraction, because economic diversification for the Bahamas was not a realistic proposition. And I said, pardon me, sir? And he said,
if you say something forcefully enough.
No,
Go ahead.
Let me explain his reasoning. Mm-hmm. And his reasoning was, let us say that we are going to move the country away from tourism.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, the cost of developing another sector of the economy is more than the country can afford right now, number one. Okay. Number two, what are you going to do with the people who had jobs in tourism but who are not qualified to do anything else? And number three, no. Okay, fine.
Go to the third one. Go to the third nonsense.
I think one and two are sufficient. I want to make sure the guest has the opportunity.
So the first thing, right? When you say the country at this point doesn't have enough money to go to a different industry,
no, that's not what I said.
I was summarizing.
Not what he said,
right?
And you're summarizing wrong.
Go ahead. He said
what he said was the cost of developing another sector of
right,
the economy.
The country
was
didn't have
more than the country could afford at the moment.
Now, is this a spiritual price that he was talking about, or is it an actual?
No,
economic
actual problem. Look at BPL.
No, okay.
Look at BPL.
That's case in point. I was going to use them as an example.
And I
would like to use them as an example.
I would like to use them as an example, good, too.
So we're going to use the same example. BPL has this over, the wire is hanging over.
Yes.
Because it was cheaper. But that is also why they have to pump out so much electricity, because they're losing it in the wires. All right?
That is...
Okay, let him finish his argument, okay, and then we'll come in with any technical.
Yeah, you have to correct. You could correct all the. Because I didn't take physics. Anyway, so BPL will tell you that in order for them to go to solar, it's going to cost X number of dollars,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And they wish to do it in a certain amount of time. By the time they get around to saying we're ready to do it, it costs double that, and then they say we don't have the money now, so we're going to do it in a certain amount of time. By the time they say that again, it'd be double that again. I've seen that. Is that not the way of the world? That's what ends up happening, right?
I got to come in here on this.
Go ahead.
Number one, the reason that the wires are above head is actually to save on costs, not only in the initial build out of the infrastructure, but in the continuing delivery. If you buried cables, the physics is that you have to pump in more electricity over a longer run. It's just because of the coupling to the earth, okay?
Okay.
They up in the air to save energy. That's the long and short of it.
Then I stand corrected on the specifics, not just the wires.
Plus the wires, they cost way more to trench and whatever. Right?
No, I know that is, I know definitely putting wires on the ground.
But I'm just saying there's several reasons why it's more cost effective,
right,
even given hurricane seasons. The second thing though,
mm-hmm,
is that
this is frustrating.
Is that the cost of solar in particular,
right,
has been plummeting over the last few decades. So it can't be correct that
it's going to
BPL
keep
is waiting and the cost is going to double over a given time. Yeah, that curve changes with time.
Yes,
but to say, okay, they waited and now the price of everything has gone up on a performance to panel basis, that is completely incorrect.
That is the opposite of correct.
So what is the reason that they're, sorry, go ahead. You're right.
So right. The challenge in terms of BPL as an institution, as opposed to the theoretical creature that is BPL, right?
Right.
In the real world, the fact that BPL has a legacy debt of hundreds of millions of dollars that is sitting on its books must be dealt with. Brave Davis came up with something when he was the Minister of Public Works called the Rate Reduction Bond, where he was supposed to ring fence that debt, sell it as a special purpose vehicle to the debt market, because it's sovereign debt. You could always get your money back on sovereign debt, and that free up BPL to move forward without that debt to actually spend money to develop these issues,
right,
these things.
Okay.
Right? He got voted out. The Minnis administration came to the conclusion that the rate reduction bond was the way to go. They developed it to an extent in a different direction, but the whole point of what they had proposed was that they would introduce a small fee that would last 20 to 25 years that you would pay as a consumer, that would allow the company to not only get rid of the debt, but also to transition to a renewable energy mix that makes environmental sense, right? The people rejected that notion because they did not wish.
You was voting.
They did not.
Somebody called the election too quick. But go ahead.
But anyway, we ain't gonna talk about that. They did not wish to pay the rate reduction bond fee because they thought, oh well, you add in another fee. When one takes into consideration the fact that the bill had been reduced by 25% and that the fee would only have been about 10%. There's still a 15% reduction in the cost of electricity. So realistically speaking, the challenge that you have is that the company gave you a way to do what you want them to do, but because of the unfortunate reality of our politics, then we now find ourselves in a situation where what you are proposing, as in a switch to renewable energy,
right,
does not seem to be in the cards.
Right. So,
Even though the man who created the idea of the rate reduction bond when he was the Minister of Works is now the Prime Minister.
Right. So, I will say, I picked the wrong metaphor. I'm okay with that. So, rather than use a metaphor, back to the tourism angle.
Back to tourism. Okay, go ahead.
I feel, in my lowly ignorance, right, that him saying that the cost to begin a new industry, once again, I may be paraphrasing, develop a new industry, mm-hmm, was too great. I do not take that anybody who is saying we need to transition from tourism, even though some person may have wanted it to be to happen within a year or immediately, that anybody who sat down and thought about it thought that this would happen in 5 years. Yeah. Like in 5 years, we'd have no hotels. Mm-hmm. I don't think anybody was thinking on those lines. If anything, there were probably people who were like, we'd have tourism and something else. Like how initially we had tourism and banking, right? When I was younger, they used to say tourism and banking. Tourism is our number one industry, banking is our number two industry. Mm-hmm. Now we have ATMs, so we don't even have tellers in any of our banks. But I would assume that that was what people were suggesting when they're having this conversation. And that beginning something would not be the same cost as immediately switching over. So there must be something that we could say, okay, we will take some of this money to begin this industry.
Some of which money?
Whatever money, the tourism money.
You understand that at the time there was no tax, quote unquote. There was no value added tax.
No, I'm not talking about
slush fund. Right?
I'm not talking about, we didn't have a tax on like the, what's the hotel thing where they pay for the people outside.
But you understand that whatever they receive in terms of headcount, they actually pay to subsidize people staying in the hotels.
Listen,
pay to subsidize people coming here on cruise ships.
No, listen,
to subsidize people coming here on airplanes.
I understand that, but right? I'm not saying
they pay to subsidize advertising the Bahamas.
I'm not suggesting that we have enough money to pay for everything.
You don't have enough money to pay for anything.
No, but here's the thing. We do have enough money to pay for something.
What? What do we pay for?
What can we
pay for?
What are you talking about?
If you're going to make an argument, I want you to make as a matter of fact, so, not conjecture.
So, if we're talking about government, right? The bulk of what the government spends money on is paying workers.
Yes.
So let's take that out of the equation.
How?
I'm just saying. Let's say we leave that alone, right? Mm-hmm. We're not going for that money.
Okay.
Everything else. Whether that be, and like some, I know some of the road money comes from somebody says, oh, we'll give you this money to build roads. I know that, right? But some of that money is all to us. I'm just saying.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but the entire point is
there could
have started if only by engaging a consultant.
Right. And I'm saying, and that would be.
And I'm sure there were many consultancies given up.
There definitely was a place to start, absolutely.
Right, and that's the only point.
Yes.
Right? Mm-hmm. And that would be 20-something years ago, and if you had started something 20-something years ago, we wouldn't be on our back foot right now saying, oh, we have to get something going.
I agree.
Right? The second point that he made was...
that what are you going to do with the people?
Right. It's dangerous that you would have persons where you specifically taught them to do only this one thing. And if this one thing
you are assigning responsibility. The reason I'm challenging it is because responsibility.
I have to.
You can't. How?
Because the people gave. That's why the people gave up their power, because they gave it to the government. They gave the government their power.
Peter Blair said this in 2010, 11, the majority of his classmates when he graduated from high school, the dudes just wanted to go over Paradise Island and get a job in the hotel.
Yeah.
So that they could get a Honda and some rims.
Yes.
Right? What did the government have to do with that?
Because that's what was... people, I want you to know, people were telling people to do that. People were encouraging people to do that. You can't make it seem like...
How is it that... Okay.
Is it not the government's point, I guess,
because we were raised...
To put incentives?
By the families we were raised by, is what you're trying to suggest.
I mean, that's part of it.
We're going to have to stop the conversation there. We didn't get to talk about creativity.
Yeah.
I really want to talk about creativity.
I'm actually happy because that means that most, if not all, of the next conversation is going to be centered around that.
Oh, yes. Well, then can I just say this?
Please.
This idea of personal responsibility is, in fact, somebody shirking their personal responsibility, right? We persons often tend to repeat it because it sounds good, but the only way a country works is if we all realize, well, what is a country? It's a group of people, right? We've decided that we are a country. Mm-hmm. Other than that, there is what, well, it's not a rock, because you could have two countries on the same rock, and then we have multiple rocks, but we're still one country. So we've decided as a people, all of us, we make up this country. That means that even though I individually believe something, we have to negotiate what I believe and what I want to do with what you believe and what you want to do, all right? That's why we have laws. That's also why we decide, okay, we're going to pick this guy to decide between us if we don't agree on how a law should be read or whatever, and we got to pick another guy to maybe write the laws. And then we say, okay, you know what?
This is some serious gender bias, I have to say.
I mean, guys in the French sense, right? And so... From that point.
What is the French sense?
Okay. No, anyway, like, because guy could be man or woman.
Yeah, right? Yeah, I agree.
All right, so when you say, okay, there's personal responsibility. Yes, there's personal responsibility that is folded in our joined responsibility. If we don't, we have this idea of common sense, but common sense is not common because it is automatic. Common sense is common because it's shared. Right? If nobody tells you how to walk, how to cross the street, or you're supposed to walk facing traffic or drive on the left-hand side, people would drive all over the road, they still do, but they would drive all over the road and not know they were wrong, right? And they would cross the road haphazardly and get knocked down. You have to be taught certain things, and then it becomes, because so many people know it, it's just common and it's common sense. If we don't do that, then when people don't do the thing that we all know, but a generation skipped it and they stopped teaching it, and we say, well, why don't they do that? Don't they know they could just do that? Same thing applies with hotels. If everybody's saying, get a job, as soon as you leave school, get a job, and you say, oh, you should have a car, and you see the person who has a car is rewarded by the attention of women and status in the community, you are going to want a job because nobody else came inside the community and said...
Gender bias too.
I mean, women can like women. Not
continue, please.
Right? So I was like, so if you, the fact that somebody did not have somebody or did not have enough of pressure to say, hey, yes, this is an option, but this is not the only option. Here are some other options based on what is available now. And then when you learn these options, you might even come up with a new option yourself. You can't then say those persons chose 20 years later, they knew what they were getting into. They did it, right? And it's not just personal responsibility. The community as a group helped to push them in that direction. We as the collective have a place to play in that. And then when we say we give our power to individuals, in this case, we have what, 39 or 40 now? We have 40. Right, we give our power, our 400,000 of us give 40 people our power, right? And that's what, 40,000 each? 1,000 each? 10,000 each? I can't do math. I'm horrible at math. Several thousand each. For them to then say, it is the individual, that whatever happens, and we can see where this is a system failing, right? Or this is, you have access to more knowledge than us. You could have started something or informed us of something, but you didn't. You are shirking your responsibility, and your responsibility is greater than my individual responsibility, because I've given you mine, and so have 999,000, several other thousand people have also given you their responsibility. And so in that regard, I feel like, no, it's nonsense to be like, oh, you know, when he says that these people, they only learned how to work inside the hotel because that is what we taught them or told them that they needed to do to make it in life. And they were good citizens, and they listened to their elected leaders, and they listened to their pastors, and they listened to their parents. And the repercussion of being a good citizen is that whatever country you live in, you get what that country produces. And if your country produces nothing, you get nothing. But if your country produces wealth, then you get wealth. The problem is, we live in the Bahamas. So if you're a good citizen in the Bahamas, you get whatever the Bahamas produces. And what do we produce in the Bahamas, Quincy?
We produce wealth.
We do not produce wealth.
Oh, yeah.
We hoard wealth.
We produce
wealth. We redirect wealth.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't produce anything.
Oh, yeah, we produce wealth.
We don't produce anything. Absolutely. We're a service industry.
Oh,
and partly
we have.
Partly thanks
have
to
service industries.
One of our, many of our former prime ministers.
We have service industries, but we're not. I would not say that we are a service industry.
The money that we have inside our country is based on what? Our dollar is only worth something. Our dollar is a representation of each American dollar in the system, is it not? It's not a representation of gold or oil or wheat. It's a representation of one Bahamian dollar for one American dollar.
Okay, I think you're muddying the conversation now, because to get into fiat versus things
that's
based
only,
on
that's
minerals.
Only money for people who think deeply about things like that. Don't,
no, I'm not saying.
Don't put us all on your level, Matthew. So,
I'm saying, right? Our money is, that's what
savage.
Our money is pegged to, right? Is it not?
We are now at the end of a moment. And so I wanna stop us there.
When we return, we'll talk about influencers.
When you come back. We're going to talk about influences. We're going to talk about creativity. We're going to talk about the Bahamian movies.
We're going to talk about theater.
We're going to, yeah, exactly. Yeah, I think that's.
We're going to talk about the Bahamian video scene as well, not mm-hmm. just quote unquote movies.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And
come back with a paper about the economic situation. Go ahead.
please, in the name of all that is decent and holy, do not. Do not rob us of the opportunity to talk to you about some of these things that we have seen in your output, your production output. Stephen, thank you very much, my friend. I really appreciate your time and your thoughts and your energy. It's really awesome.
I could see Quincy throwing his fingers up at me.
I was throwing the peace sign. And saying thank you, yes. And I'm going to finish my Teeling Irish whiskey pot still, the AKA the spirit of Dublin, the not just apples and pears, but caramel and a little spice like some white pepper.
And you say it's not dessert?
Hmm?
That sounds like dessert.
Maybe it's dessert. I mean, that's why. There's one reason that people have it after their meal, you know, because it's a beautiful thing. But, you know, whatever. Matthew, any final words?
No, I'm just looking forward to this conversation to continue. So, enjoy.
Bye, y'all. I'm not going to do what they do on Smartless and try to create a way of saying bye. So, I'm just gonna let the show end there.
Yeah, yeah.